everybody. This is William Del Pilar, and this is Fired Up, episode 76. And have we got a beauty for you? This topic we're going to talk about is Kilmar Armando Abrego Garcia. You know, us Latinos, our names are like a mile long. But this was originally going to be part of the last show we did, but it's a pretty heavy topic. So I wanted to give you a very deep insight, and I wanted to bring on a Rhodes Scholar, a lawyer for many years. He's in the investment world. He has gravitas to give us insight, and he has gravitas from the perspective you're going to get a legal point of view. And most podcasts out there that I listen to, they're not giving you the legal definition of this word or that word. They're just giving you their opinion. Some I agree with, some I don't. But I think it's important to understand the law and what the mainstream media is attempting to do and how they're framing it versus what SCOTUS actually came down with their ruling. I'm also concerned a little bit. Judges are human, and I do believe Trump may be alienating some of these judges. Most of them don't like him anyway, because the Democrats are judge shopping and putting some of these cases in front of activist judges like Judge Boasberg. That's my opinion. We'll get our guest's opinion as well. So it's a heavy duty show. I want you to listen closely. I want you to be aware of what our guest has to say. And with that, let's not keep him in the shadows.
Hey, Randy, how you doing? Fired Up Nation, how are you?
Well, to the audience, this is Randy Burholtz. He has been a guest on this podcast before. He was also heavily involved in the California Republican Party, and he's no longer with that because he has some other goals he's looking to achieve. But Randy, if you can tell the audience a little bit about yourself, sir, to remind them who you are.
Sure. So I tell people I'm a JD MBA. I went to Cornell undergrad. I went to Yale Law School. I was a Rhodes Scholar at Oxford. I personally have either interviewed with or know some of these judges or justices. I clerked for Judge Jerry E. Smith on the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, one of the conservative stalwarts. And I've been the chair of the San Diego chapter of the Republican National Lawyers Association. I've been on the board of the San Diego chapter of the Federalist Society. So, I'm not a litigator, but I'm a corporate guy. But, you know, today's world, you have to understand the law, and understanding aspects of political law and, you know, constitutional law. It's important for everybody's life here. So.
Yeah, in politics, I always tell people who are interested in politics that are accountants, I'm like, if you can't make it, become an accountant that specializes in political law. Because come political season, I rarely ever see a CPA who understands all this politics, the law, the regs. I never see them unemployed. In fact, I always see a lack of them. Some of the grassroots candidates who need a tax accountant who understands the law, they're nowhere to be found. I know two San Diego candidates from the past. One went all the way up to Orange County. The other one drove all the way to Riverside in terms of what they found. So thank you for coming on. I truly mean that. And let's get right into it. Before we get into the actual case of Abrego Garcia, we'll refer to him because it's Kilmar Armando Abrego Garcia. We'll just call him Abrego Garcia. I wanted to talk about, he's not a conservative, but because so many things have gone so far left, Jonathan Turley, who is a well-known constitutional lawyer, has kind of become a conservative just because it seems like we've gone so far to the left, because I remember him early on as being more moderate. But he had an article, and he pointed out the fact that he emphasized a letter that Judge Wilkinson, an opinion, and in the passage he said, I'm going to read it to the audience here, the basic differences between the branches mandate a serious effort at mutual respect. The respect the courts must accord the executive must be reciprocated by the executive's respect for the courts. Too often today, this has not been the case, as calls for impeachment of judges for decisions the executive disfavors and exhortations to disregard court orders sadly illustrate. And he goes on and on to talk about coming together. And the reason I wanted to bring this and get Randy's thought process is First of all, where were you judges when, with every decision, every leftist SCOTUS judge has made that does not respect the Constitution or the law? But that's neither here nor there. That's just my personal take, Randy. My issue here is whether I agree with President Trump or not, because I do, is beside the point, because their tone, their demeanor, and I know why they're doing this. They're doing this to push back against the vile evilness of what how the mainstream media is portraying this individual, literally to be a saint when he's far from it. However, I think that may be having a negative effect on these on the courts, because he did come out and talk about impeachment of judges. I've talked about that for years, of the activist judges. And my issue is not just with the activist judges. My issue is when Chief Justice Roberts, when the Obama camp came in and said, oh, no, this isn't a tax, when he was talking about Obamacare. But to make it legal, Justice Roberts literally changed it into a tax to get it through. And my point being in saying that is judges play politics, too. I think Justice Roberts has his legacy he wants to be seen as or remembered as, et cetera, et cetera. I don't view that as good or bad. I view that as human nature. But I worry about President Trump coming across as a bully in terms of how the courts may see him. Your thoughts, Randy?
Yeah, well, you know, let's take a step back a second. What people have to understand is that, you know, we have our, you know, our separation of powers, right? You know, the executive, the legislative, and the judiciary. And some people could say we have the bureaucracy, and then they could say the press. So maybe four or five branches. But, you know, this is all part of a political governmental system. We have to understand that. So when one person says, this is political, the whole damn thing is political. We created all this to balance all this out so that we are not, you know, beholden to dictators either on the legislative side who can serve forever, aka Joe Biden in the Senate, or Supreme Court justices, or, you know, any judges who can serve forever pretty much until they're dying. And believe me, you know, I served on the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals in Houston, Texas. And I had one judge, 93 years old. I and another clerk had to literally carry him into the room slobbering because the damn guy wouldn't go. I think he died when he was 95, and he kept giving opinions, you know. So when people say, oh, this is different, it's not different. I mean, this is part of the process that the founders created, you know. So people are just grandstanding out there. So
I get that, Randy, and I completely agree. Now, you gave us what is the right, proper answer from the perspective of how it should be and how it is. But regardless of that, I don't mean to push back as much as that kind of doesn't matter with these judges who have egos. Kind of like that 93-year-old judge. You kept having to prop him out. It sounds like this judge is concerned with how Trump is portraying them. And Chief Robert SCOTUS, SCOTUS said the same thing when Trump first mentioned terminating or impeaching these judges. Mm-hmm. So I agree with you, but it seems these judges are still putting their two cents in.
Well, look, so I went to the Yale Law School, supposedly the best law school in the country at the time and supposedly now. So I say supposedly because I have my doubts. But you know, and when I went to law school, I thought, oh, it's going to be this bastion of people just sitting there like gods in Greece and thinking about justice. Bull crap. It wasn't about that. It was a bunch of political hacks, mostly on the left, who just used the courts to get what they wanted from a political activist standpoint. You know, as we were talking, I went to school with Judge Jeb Boasberg. I mean, who was a 6'8" Yale basketball player, nice guy, but the most radical person you ever want to meet. And he's like out there, New York, you know, New York guy, just as left as you want. Plus, I went to school with Judge Kavanaugh, who I even thought was a lefty back then, and I guess he shifted over the years. So and this whole part about politics is not in the law. Oh my God! Go to any law school in America and find out how many conservative professors there are. I taught at Thomas Jefferson School of Law and the University of San Diego School of Law for 15 years overall combined, and I was probably one of two conservative people, and I let my voice be known, and I got into fights with professors, but this sort of misunderstanding that these judges are these people sitting up here who don't have political views is just total nonsense. Sorry, that's my opinion.
No, I agree. So the final take on this topic before we move on, why would he say that then if this is just typical politics?
As you said, some of these some of these commentators and these judges, they start out being one thing and then they become another thing all of a sudden. But that to have Harvey Wilkerson or Wilkerson, or to have him be a conservative just behooves me. I remember this guy as a lib, and as you said with Jonathan Turley, he's sort of the same way. But look, I think there is a fear that we're fighting a bit too much. There's a fear that there's disrespect in the courtroom. There's a fear that the judges are coming against the executive branch. But you know what? The judges were part of the problem for the last 4 years. They were part of the problem against President Trump. Lawfare was rampant against the president and against conservatives all across the country. And where were the courts? Where were the courts when we had election integrity issues with the 2020 election? Where were the courts? You know, the Chief Justice Robert, you're right. Chief Justice Roberts said, "It's not my job, man." Do you remember Chief Chico and the Man? It's not my job, man. Seriously, man, it's not your job to decide some of the most important issues. So to me, the judges are getting what they freaking deserve. And you know what? Why shouldn't we impeach them? They impeached President Trump. How many times? Twice. How many times did they try to impeach him? Come on, get off your high horse. Read the Constitution. Read the Federalist Papers. This is what it's all about. And if you don't like politics, get out of the kitchen. And you know what? Maybe we should have term limits of 4 years for Supreme Court judges, and justice. I mean, Supreme Court justices and also federal judges. I mean, get over yourself. Sorry.
That's my opinion. You're right. The whole purpose of these lifetime appointments was so they wouldn't be bought off or the corruption, all that. But at the end of the day, the founding fathers forgot human nature. You know, the longer you're in power, the more corrupt you will eventually become. And maybe not openly corrupt, but corrupt from the perspective you start to close your mind to seeing the bigger picture and your ideology, your philosophical beliefs take over. And I got to be honest, Randy, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but since the turn of the century, at least when I really started looking at politics, I've yet to see a liberal justice rule unless it's a blatantly obvious case. And usually those rulings will happen like 9-0. You know, because it's so obvious. But it's like Sotomayor, all of them. They all vote.
Well, here's the truth of courts, federal courts, and maybe state courts too. I don't know. I've been in front of some state courts, but federal courts, 95 to 99% of the issues you deal with are non-controversial. There, you have a legal background, and you can make a decision. You know, you get that. You know, 1 to 5% of the issues, though, are really political. And let's face it, judges, justices come up through the political ranks. They are picked by their, just look at the sway we have of, you have ACLU attorneys who become Supreme Court justices, and then you have Federal Society lawyers becoming Supreme Court justices. So the problem is we have been so polarized as a nation the last number of years that you get the left and the right on the court, and we say, okay, make a decision.
No, that's just it. That's my issue is I'm okay when I see some of these conservatives make a decision that follows the Constitution that goes against what my political wants, desire. I never see it from the left. You know, so my take is if he's a leftist or a judge on the right, I'm okay with that if they have integrity. But it seems it's like the latest judge, Kwame, I forget her name.
Yeah.
But she played politics. Well, I can't tell you what a woman is. To me, that's a disqualification.
Yeah, can't tell what a woman is. Oh. Yeah,
that's a disqualification. I mean, look between your legs, judge, and see what a woman is. You know. Yeah. So one more question before we get into the topic here. They have been judge shopping in my interpretation. I read an article that said 70% of Trump's cases wind up in Biden/Obama courts. And I'm not even a fan of the Bushy appointments because he really went moderate center.
Bush.
Some of his appointments may as well be liberal. Yeah. But that said, My issue is that's a given. We have to fight. And I blame the Republican Party for letting these judges get through Congress. They should not have. But my issue is, how come there's not more pushback by Republicans to try to force these judges not off the bench, but to recuse themselves? Like Boasberg, his daughter directly benefits from illegal aliens. She works for a nonprofit that receives money. And he's not the only one. Mercantile had conflicts of interest. Now, they have the right, my understanding, I've never looked it up, but I assume because they don't recuse themselves, that's their call. But, I mean, to me, it's blatantly obvious with Boasberg. It's the easy example because he's one in the news right now. But to me, it was obvious with Mercantile. What's your thought process? Am I wrong or right? Feel free to correct me. But two, if I am correct, or even in just a general sense, how do we get judges to force themselves to recuse themselves from these cases? So, for example, for me, that's an impeachment. I don't know. But logic would dictate that's an impeachable offense. He should have recused himself, did not. Let's impeach his ass. I mean, do you understand what I'm asking here?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Look, and part of the problem is the Republicans have been wusses. We've been wusses. And I've been in the Republican National Workers Association probably for 20 years now. And, you know, when President Trump, you know, was first, you know, running, you know, the people in the RNLA were like, well, he doesn't really hold our values. Yeah. He's a bit extreme. And then in the first term of the administration, they're all like, oh, we love you. We've always been behind you. But they're the biggest bunch of BSers. You know, look, the problem with Republicans, we've been weak. And now under President Trump's second term, we don't care anymore of being called names. We don't care of being called anything because we see if we do not act as a party or as a nation, we are going to be what we were the last 4 years, which is where you see 10 million plus illegal persons coming into this country, most to do harm to our citizens and or to our country. And that's, you know, maybe that's a lead to the next topic, but you're right. Part of this is we've had a Republican Party that has been weak. That's why President Trump appointed Michael Whatley, who I met Michael when he was first named general counsel to the to the Republican National Committee, and then President Trump you know had the wherewithal to appoint him as chair of the committee. So we have a lawyer who understands election integrity and lawfare. But do you realize?
I'm sorry, you said a name that most of the audience is not going to know. So what has President Trump appointed him for and what his duties are?
Yes, so Michael Whatley came in after the previous person who was from Michigan. I forget her name offhand, in President Trump's first term, he had another chair of the Republican National Committee.
Rona McDaniel.
So she was a Romney, but she did well. I mean, she brought Michigan to President Trump, but she was not a conservative.
Right.
She was an establishment type, more of a Romney. She was a Romney type. And then Harmeet Dhillon, our friend Harmeet Dhillon, you know, who's now at the Justice Department office chair, assistant attorney general for civil rights, and she's going to clean up. But Harmeet Dhillon, Harmeet Dhillon and I are good friends, and you know, she was one of the only ones, and she and I were one of the only ones talking about lawfare. You know, I mean, I think I remember in the RNLA maybe 8 years ago, we were just saying, guys, we're sick of playing defense, play offense. But step back. So Michael Whatley is the current chair of the Republican National Committee. Michael is a lawyer who was first put in probably 4 years ago, maybe by President Trump, and done a bang up job because he understands lawfare. And Harmeet Dhillon was one of the first people to say to the RNC, of which she was the California committee woman for years. She said to the RNC, hey, we're getting killed on lawfare. They're killing us. We need to throw some money behind this, just like we need to do for election integrity. You know, so, and she was right. We were playing defense. You know, we're always playing defense against these a-holes, and now we're playing offense, and now we're in power. So.
Correct. I like her partner too, Ron Coleman. So real quick, yes. Just so we don't leave the audience hanging regarding judges who don't recuse themselves. Am I looking at it wrong? Or
no, you're right, 100%. Conflict of interest. There's a conflict of interest.
Is there anything we could do to get them out get them to recuse themselves?
Let go public with the conflict, and then have a Republican lawyer to you know file something saying there's a conflict. And you're right; these conflicts go right through. I mean, look at some of the judges who were trying to you know file those bogus charges in New York and everything else against you know President Trump.
Yeah.
I mean, who were part of that process? There were conflicts right across the board.
You know, that's why I get so angry. Oh, real quick, I wanted to make this point about Harmeet. Well, one, I've met Harmeet 3 times, but said 5 words each time. You know why? Every single time, give props to the Indian culture. When I brought a friend, 3 of them at times have been Indian. Hey, I want to meet Harmeet. I want to meet Harmeet. Do you know her? I know who she is. And I walked up to her all 3 times. Hi, Harmeet. My name's William. This is so-and-so. He just wants to meet you. You know? Yes. Yeah. She's a very petite woman. But here's the point I wanted to make about Harmeet and Ron Coleman, too, to a degree, because he's Jewish. It seems it takes immigrants or people outside the country or those with a strong family value, strong religious background, et cetera, et cetera. I'm a former Catholic. It seems, and I'm really pushing more of the immigrant thought process. It seems it takes that we Americans have gotten complacent. We take for granted. And it seems like these outsiders are or the one with the strong foundational backgrounds are the ones who are pushing us to fight. And my take is we got to wake up as born Americans to understand what we take for granted. It is nowhere else in this world. And that's why the immigrants, and I don't know if Harmeet's an immigrant, but she's always come across to me as very devout to her culture, her background, yet respective of this is America. You know?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, no, no. I can't remember whether she was born in the U.S. or not, but you know, Harmeet, I think your father maybe was a professor or something, and they came into a southern town being Sikhs. And, you know, and she said, you know, it was a difficult time. But you're right. Look, some of the most pro-Americans are those who came here from other cultures because they wanted what America had, not just for the abundance, but you know, but for the laws. And the thing is, we're unique across the world. And, you know, one of the things I don't agree with the Trump administration sometimes is we have a role in the world. We are a world. We are the nation of nations, you know, and so what I differ with the president a bit, I think, on is that, you know, we do have a role in the world, and you are right. If it fails here, there's not much hope for the rest of the world. I mean, that's the truth of the matter.
I don't know if Trump is an isolationist, but I think Trump has the support of the American people from this perspective. Every past president, when outside forces, meaning our role in the world, would come and ask them, sure, no problem. Now $38 trillion in debt, over our empire's overextended. You know, we need to rein that back in. But I agree with you. We, whether Americans, and this is where me and my partner argue a lot, we are the policemen of the world. As corrupt as our government has become, we are still the best form of government in the world. And when you have David versus Goliath, it's not like the Bible. Goliath will win 99.9% of the time. We have a role to step up, because my belief is this, the strong take from the weak. And if we are strong, and if we don't stand up for the meek, those strong countries, China, Russia, I mean, you saw what Russia did to Eastern Europe under Stalin.
Yeah.
That history will repeat itself. And when I was a child, I remember, I don't know how it was ingrained in me, but I innately knew that when Russia, you know, Soviet bloc with us growing up, when they thought of doing something, their first thought would be, what is the United States? How will they respond? And when that stops happening, I think the world is the domino effect of slowly falling, because it takes a lot more to be stronger. I mean, a lot more to be good for humanity than it does.
But let me just set out, if I could, just a second here, what I think is the Trump view. And you got to really look hard at what the president is doing. He's not just I don't think he's an isolationist, but I think in President Trump's view, and you know, I'm not a surrogate for him yet, but I'd like to be maybe at one point. But, you know, what I think, if you're going to describe what he does, President Trump views we need to get the best deals we can for America first. But then I think what President Trump is doing is saying we're not abandoning the world, but we're setting an example for the world. And we're trying to encourage the world to do what we do to protect their own interests and to build up the ability, like, for example, with NATO in Europe. He wants NATO to step up and be men, not to be friggin', you know. The truth is nobody has time to be a leftist loony. And the problem is, since we have been paying the bills, look, it's almost like kids, right? You know, first generation kids, you know, immigrants, they're working hard. They get the money. Second generation kids get to sort of, sort of slouch off their parents sometimes. You know what I mean? And the problem is now, you know, is some nations have been slouching off of us. And Germany, I mean, they can't afford to be liberal. You know, Germans need to work. British need to work. French need to get off their butts and work and defend their territory. They can't depend on us because, you know, it's like when you stay with your kids. When we're not around, what the hell are you going to do?
Exactly.
You know, and look, it's this whole concept, and I put it forth, independent, self-sustaining economic units. And that's what the rest of the world needs to do. They need to be able to provide for their people. And if you think about immigration, for example, if the rest of the world, if the big daddies in Africa take care of their people won't be coming here. They'll be satisfied by where they are. Latin America, Asia, keep your people home and make. And there are necessary revolutions or necessary things that have to happen in those territories. But stop coming to us and thinking that we're your savior. We're a good country, but we get to determine who comes here, and we can't take the world. They can't fit in our bag. And, you know, they just can't. We'll have some parts of our immigration system for refugees, small number, but a lot of the people coming are not refugees, not at all. They're economic immigrants who want to make a better life. That's okay. But we need to determine who comes into our country. You don't get to just cross over our border and say, I'm an American. It doesn't work.
Right. I agree. I completely agree with every take there. I do believe Trump is correct in stating America first. And this is an analogy I always give. When you're on that airplane, what do they tell you as you're taking off when they give you the air, the oxygen mask? Well, that oxygen mask, you put it on yourself first. Because if you don't save yourself, you may not have enough seconds to save your kid.
Exactly.
Take care of yourself. And we need to do that. And my whole issue with these illegal aliens are, well, those are jobs Americans won't do. Of course, because instead of paying, when I was a kid, $8 an hour, now you're paying these guys 75 cents an hour. Of course an American's not going to take that job. Then they throw it back on us. Oh, so you want more expensive grocery prices or restaurant prices? I'm like, I can live with that as long as we have a fair system.
Because we're paying anyway. Look at the amounts we're paying in California for Medicaid for illegal immigrants. Right. And I'm not going to call them immigrants. They're not friggin' immigrants. They're aliens.
I always call it that.
You're an alien. Unless you come in the right way, you're an alien. You know, but anyway, I'm sorry.
I agree. So, yeah. And my take comes from being born and raised as an American citizen, living on an American base, but my mom being Panamanian, my father married her. So my whole, every weekend I was with the Panamanian side. And even as a child, Randy, I just knew, I never used the term special. My mother told me that, you know, but I knew I was different because I got, and I think I've said this before, maybe to you, I got to go home to a toilet with running water. Hot water, AC. The big event one summer, we stayed at my grandmother's, and my shower was the river. Where I went to the bathroom was the outhouse. The big event was the village coming together one summer to build my grandmother a brand new outhouse. And they were so happy. It was like a trophy thing. All that. I mean, and so I never forgot that. And then I never forgot they could not say what we could say freely. Because we were protected class being Americans. Don't mess with the dollar. Don't mess with Americans. And that was pretty much across the board. But I saw two dictators. And then when I was in my early 20s, me spouting my mouth off, one of my friends jacked me up behind a wall away from everybody. You need to shut up. You know, nobody cares. I mean, they don't care about you. You're the American. But we're the ones who can wind up being disappear one night in terms of Noriega. So I've never forgotten that. And when I see what Democrats did with Facebook, with the censoring of Hunter Biden's laptops, the censoring of doctors with COVID, and I see Democrats, libertarians, and rhinos who were okay with that, I'm like, that's the beginning of the, what I call the domino effect. The country's slowly falling. So I am hand in hand with everything you say. And let's hope our meet and what's his name, Watley?
Michael Watley.
Michael Watley can do something, because we do need to fight back. We do need to fight back. The reason we're in this mess is because we have no term limits and we have people in power who no longer fight back. And Democrats, what they know how to do is fight and take like a bully, because they know the Republicans.
That's right. But William, you just said something. I want to really accentuate what you said, because I think it's a good segue to our next segment, too. You know, what you really said is right on. You know, one of the things the left is claiming, right? So, I say, look, so the, you know, the current dispute with this one gentleman, you know, that's MSN, a 13, everything else. And, you know, one of the issues is the left always plays up the worst case scenario. Oh my God, we are going to get rid of due process for Americans. Trump is going to send you home. And you're an American. No, that's not the case at all. But the Supreme Court does have to concern itself with the slippery slope. You know, and so I think they're trying to figure out here. But the truth of the matter is that people who are in this country illegally, I think at least, and this is my own view and probably not the view of the courts, you don't have due diligence. You don't have due process. Get the hell out of our country. And the president has the ability to send you home. The problem is the Democrats' policy and what they've done in the courts is they brought people here illegally under false pretenses, saying you're an American the day you step here. And that's wrong. That there's no constitutional backup for that. There's no court cases backup for that. You have no rights. You are in this country illegally. But the Democrats wanted people here because they thought they were going to vote for Democrats. And let's just be honest. That's the one of the hugest RICO cases that could be brought in American history against the Democratic Party. They are just corrupt beyond belief. And if you're a Democrat listening to this today, I was a Democrat for 14 years. My people were coal miners, you know, and dress factory workers. I mean, they're the types of people who were in the Democratic Party because it was the party of labor. That doesn't exist today. These people in power are not those people.
Right.
I'm sorry, William. Anyway.
No, that's fine. My final thought on this is what you said is key. They thought they could bring Latinos in because
anybody, Chinese, Africans.
But what they failed with Latinos is we are Chinese, Arabs, Jewish, white, black. Look at me. My grandmother was called the N-word when she came to visit us in North Carolina. Yeah. That's how diverse my immediate family is. You know, I have the Spaniard gene from the Puerto Rican side. But how many Puerto Ricans you see are your traditional beautiful caramel color? I always forget what the proper term is. I don't care. I'm going to say it. You know, and they failed. But to me, that tells what I try to tell people is look at how Democrats viewed us. Look at how Jasmine Crockett right now, who, in my opinion, is just a flat-out racist, views us Latinos. We're only good enough for toilets. For the Democrat Party as a whole, we're just good enough, like blacks are today. Just vote for us. We'll take care of you, wink, wink. And they never do. And that's why I'm in this political game. But that said, let's get into the topic at hand, and let's start it off with a CNN poll. And this is one reason I think the Trump camp is so – I don't want to say arrogant, not the right word, but so they think they're in the right. And it's just one reason why Obama got so much done when he first got elected. 2016, 38% favored deportation. Today, 56%. Before we get into Abrego itself, I felt this is the foundation of why Trump is doing what he can and why the courts are looking at it differently than they did in 2016 when there was so much hate. They see, okay, we're judges, but they're human. They're like, the people back this versus they're going to do whatever they want in terms of going against Trump as a lot of them did in 2016. And a lot of them are still going against him. But I think this is a powerful number here. And I think the more the Trump camp can showcase the Abrego Garcias, showcase the murder rates, the rape scenarios. And sorry, people, that's politics. You showcase what you want to see to get your point. What's your thought on these numbers?
Oh, no, I mean, I even think they're higher. This is coming from CNN, to be honest with you, you know, which is amazing from CNN. I think they're 75%. I mean, it all matters how you ask the questions. Look at undocumented immigrants. They're not immigrants. Let's be clear. They're not immigrants. They're aliens who are, some came here to do harm. Some came here maybe to work. But if you're not a pure refugee and you've gone through the process for a refugee or an immigrant who've gone through the process for an immigrant in one of the categories, you are an alien and you have zero rights to be in this country. And the problem with the left is that they have tried to give them every single right they can. And so it's like they think if you step over the border, if you have a baby in America, that all of a sudden that's America. You know,
no, it's almost not.
It's almost like the church, for example, right? You know, and I'm a, you know, my father was Roman Catholic, my mother was, you know, Lutheran, and then Methodist. You know, it's like there's this whole process of baptizing somebody into a religion, where you come into that religion. You just don't get that religion by just being born.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? You know, and you know, it's sorry.
I don't know. I agree. I think this. I think that's why they're put. The Democrats, I think, have got the wrong example. This kid, Garcia, Abrego Garcia, is not the poster child. So I think they have miscalculated with that. And this is not the hill to die on, but I'm glad they're dying on this hill.
Exactly. Let them die. If this is all they have, oh, my God.
Whoever's calling the show. Honestly, Randy, I'm going to digress for one more moment. It seems like the I fear James Carville. I'm like, damn it, James Carville. He's running that campaign. He's this. They don't have any James Carvilles. So, and
he's a conservative now. He may become a Republican at some point.
James Carville, for the people who don't know, was the architect of the Clinton win against Bush, which Clinton was not supposed to win. And I don't remember his name, but he was also the architect. He ran a campaign for a prime minister who got elected in Israel, who at the time was considered an uber long shot. And he got elected. He only held one term, but he got him elected. Okay, so let's get into Garcia. He was born July 26, 1995. No, not in Maryland. He was born July 26, 1995 in San Salvador, El Salvador. And that's a region that's heavily influenced and impacted by MS-13 and other gang activity. That in and of itself kind of should be kind of helps build the foundation for who sit there and claim he has MS-13 ties. Just because he was born there doesn't mean he has it. But at the end of the day, it was all around him. So he arrived in Maryland right around 2011 with his brother. And the immigration status was later described as illegal with an active deportation order, meaning there's a lot of confusion in how he got here, how he was able to get through everything, how he wasn't vetted, and that, to make a long story short, ultimately led to having an active deportation order. And so, and again,
whose administration was that during?
2011, Obama.
Obama. So it was during Obama. Obama wanted to deport him.
Yes, yes, and Obama has the most deportations out of any president, at least for this century. So let's go right into his 2019 gang activity, Randy. He was detained, and I want your input. This is a very lawyer-esque, but maybe you can give a lawyer spin on it. Sure. But it's just, this is what should raise red flags. This is what the mainstream media is ignoring. This is why I wanted to make this podcast. In 2019, there was a gang investigation incident. He was detained March 28th, 2019, by Prince George's County Police in Hyattsville, Maryland, during a gang investigation. And it resulted in a report alleging significant MS-13 affiliations. Now, he was absorbed, associating with confirmed MS-13 members, wearing their colors. And this is an important note, and I'm going to go right to you after this comment here. I grew up reading and learning in the Crips and the Bloods that they would kill you if you wore their colors and weren't part of their gangs and you were in their hood. And then I read about that's how that industry, for lack of a better term, is built. If you wear gang colors that are not your own, and you're not going to last around gang members. So the fact he was wearing their gang colors is a historical assumption that he was part of MS-13. The reason I bring that up is people are trying to say, oh, that's just Chicago Bulls gear. And that's taking – that's a misunderstanding of by the average American in logic. There is no logic that they're going to kill you because you're wearing their gang colors. That's illogical. So Americans, they try to put logic into this, and they don't want to understand. Yes, wearing those gang colors signified he was a member of MS-13, including the tattoos. You want to weigh in on that there, Randy?
Yeah, I mean, it was so obvious he was MS-13. I mean, he's had so many judicial determinations that he was MS-13, you know, and it's like, you know, don't even bother with the logic anymore. He needs to just have his ass removed out of this country, period. But, you know, all these liberals, you know,
but as Randy, you said. We're fighting, though. We are fighting a message, and that's the logic. They're trying to look at it logically so they can't comprehend.
They can.
So my question to you is, I agree with you. Toss it out. But that's not how you and I are the uber minority, because we will lose if we don't.
Let me take that a second. I'm not sure about that. Get these people out of the country. Just do what the president's doing. Remove them, period. And then, you know what? How many planes does the Supreme Court have? You know, how many troops does the Supreme Court have? I mean, look, this is getting in the functions. The executive branch has the function to protect us. Does the Supreme Court protect us? Do they ever protect us?
Oh, gotcha.
This is not, it's about jurisdiction. That the Constitution is about jurisdiction. The Supreme Court, truthfully, has no jurisdiction here.
Right.
He's out. He's gone. And then, you know, they're claiming to bring him back. What jurisdiction do they have to bring him back?
And that's my whole point.
They don't have jurisdiction.
That's overstepping, meaning the only answer from the very lowest form of judge should be, this is executive authority. We have no jurisdiction here. But they don't. They have to get involved. Now, to add on to this guy, though, a confident informant identified him as an MS-13 member. Then two immigrations, what you alluded to, two immigration judges determined he was an MS-13 member, a conclusion based on the evidence his close association confirmed. So these judges, after evaluating the case in formal immigration hearings, affirmed his active gang participation. So my issue with whether it's libertarians, Democrats, mainstream media, or whatnot, isn't this part of the due process? When they say he hasn't had due process, but isn't this?
Oh, he has had so much due process. It is, you know. I'm sorry, Nick Hedgefeld. He's had so much due process already. He doesn't need any more. And the truth is, the Trump administration gave him, the Biden administration gave him all the due process. Obama gave him due process. He doesn't need any more. He's out. He's gone.
Legally speaking.
Yeah, he's out and gone.
I want to pause you there, because this is why I brought you on. You are a legal scholar.
Yeah.
You're a Rhodes scholar. You've gone to court. So from your perspective as a lawyer, you are telling us, the audience of non-lawyers, this is part of his due process that he had.
He has had so much due process that not even a typical American gets this due process. He has had so much due process.
So why are people saying he hasn't?
I have no idea, because, look, the truth is, the Biden administration considers these people to be citizens. The Trump administration did the exact right thing. You know, they got rid of him. And they got rid of him, and he's out. And the truth of the matter, from my point of view, the Supreme Court and the district and the circuit court and the district court can all make a determination about future cases about due process. But right now, this is gone. I think this is moot, to be honest with you. He's gone. You know, we're not going to bring him back. And if President Trump says, I'm not bringing him back, what's the Supreme Court going to do? Are they going to go and get,
But the Democrats will use that as an impetus.
But you know what?
Before we get to that point, because that's a major topic, I want you to parse some of those words. In full transparency to the audience, the detective that processed this reported him and got him in front of the immigration judges. He liked himself a little woman on the side there. He got busted for paying one of his informants money. She was a prostitute. And Democrats are trying to use that. Oh, this guy isn't a clean guy. They're unrelated, but in full transparency, they're trying to use that. So let's move on here.
Sure.
Okay, let's get to your point of fighting back. That is what happened this go-round with the Attorney General. They brought his wife on, CNN, oh, he's so good. Oh, he walks on water. He tooted last night. It was a unicorn toot. Oh, he's special. He's great. Well, Pam Bondi said, not so fast, and provided publicly domestic violence incident report. In 2021, Jennifer Vasquez Surra, Abrego Garcia's wife, filed for a protective order in a Maryland court detailing severe physical abuse. This is the Biden era. And the reason I bring up Obama in the Biden era, a lot of that was hands off. We don't care if they're guilty, let them go. That was the philosophy in spirit, if not in outright orders. So she reported that he punched her in the body, scratched her up, ripped her shirt, her clothes off for her, inflicted invisible bruises. These are violent acts that reflect the callous disregard for personal safety and respect for your fellow human being. Traits associated with bad people. The punching and scratching to the point of bruising demonstrates a pattern of domestic violence. And no conviction is recorded. That's, to me, the issue. But since then, she came back out and started acting as if he walks on water. So I think, to your case of fighting back, this is important. It's important to paint what I call the truth. And that he's not. And this is why I think this is not the hill for Democrats to die on. But by all means, Democrats, keep pushing that. Because I think at the end of the day, every woman out there, if they hear this, is going to look at this case completely different. Your thoughts? Great move by Pam Bondi to do. And how do you think this is going to affect the perception?
Well, the first thing, great move by Pam Bondi, yes, of course. I mean, Pam Bondi's like, she's like, they don't care. She's like going after it. And God bless the people who need that. Secondly, what do we care what people think about us anymore? I'll be honest with you. Do I care what a liberal judge thinks? You know, look, I told a secretary in President Trump's new cabinet, I told this person, I can't tell you who it is, but I told this person, I said, what do you care about what the left thinks of you? I said, they're never, whatever you're ever going to do, they're never going to be your friends. Right. So what do you care? Do the right thing that you think is right and that you think is legal. And, you know, but, you know, as far as this guy's wife, you know, I'd bring in the court and say, did you lie then or did you lie now? Or are you lying now? I mean, look, this is nonsense. I mean, I'm sorry. So the question is his wife in the country legally or what? No, seriously, I'd boot her butt out of here too. Every time you find somebody illegal, just boot them out. Just put them on a plane. Get them hell out of here. They don't deserve, they don't belong here. I don't care if she's got kids. Take the kids with them. You have the choice. Keep the kids with them or keep them here.
I've never seen this harsh side of Randy come out.
No, but honestly, we are tired of fighting nonsense. You have legal and you have illegal. We are one of the only countries in the world that puts up with this nonsense from this progressive left that is just – they hate us. They hate America. I mean, we don't need illegals in this country.
Well, I'll push back only to say that Europe, Western Europe.
Oh, my God. Don't even go there, you know. So, my wife and I were in the UK recently, and it's nonsense. But I'm sorry.
I can only imagine. Oh. So just to give you guys an idea of how the left view – oh, so real quick, in full transparency, to educate the audience a little bit, I know a few cops, and to a T, each one. I trained under one for 10 years. He was a martial arts instructor as well. He told me, Randy, that when they would get repeat calls, same family, they had the address memorized when they would hear it. A domestic abuse case. He goes, after a couple of times, we go get a cup of coffee, we take our time. He goes, because every time the wife turns on us, you know, once you start to arrest the husband, all of a sudden the wife will, at times, will get physical with you. You end up arresting both. He goes, it got to the point with a lot of domestic abuse cases where the woman would refuse to leave and this became a repeat performance. They would just take their time, let them beat each other up, take it out. Then they would come in and figure out what to do next, because the cop would tell me is we're putting ourselves in a dangerous situation of not facing one man, but also the wife. He goes, that things can go catastrophic wrong. Now, I'm not defending the cops as much as this is human nature. This is why she flipped on him. This is why she's still with him. She knows he's a bad dude, but she can't bring herself to leave him. America has documented this in articles, studies, movies, TV movies. TV shows. I mean, this is not a debatable issue. And to me, she is a woman who knows what she wrote is true, but refuses right now at this moment to acknowledge that. She was asked in one of the weakest fluff interviews. I mean, this interview was so fluff, even porn star Fluffer was like, whoa. You know, that's how fluff it was. And Michael Strahan asked her the question, and she paused. It was like silence in terms of, well, you did file a domestic abuse report, and she didn't answer. And for about 30 seconds, and then she said something. Well, maybe not quite 30 seconds, but it seemed like an eternity. Then she said something else. He goes, okay, I just had to bring it up. Moving on. He refused to pin her down into, why are you saying this today, but you reported this? And that's the problem with the media. And right now, I want your take on this. This is today's left. This is from The Atlantic. Full transparency. Uber leftist rag owned by Steve Jobs' wife, who's a billionaire now. Debbie Goldstein, a rise in sexual assaults by migrants is a price worth paying to end racism. What they're saying is, come on over, because you can have your way with our American.
Oh my God. Quasi-consensual encounters. Is that where we have gone between refugees and white West? Are you freaking kidding me? Debbie Goldstein, you know, you should be ashamed of yourself. If you have children, if you have daughters, you should be ashamed of yourself. And you should, you know, I mean, you know, your the people in your religion should be ashamed of you. Everybody should be ashamed of you because you are a despicable human being, quasi-consensual. Yeah, rape, right? Is that rape or illegal touching? People go to jail for quasi-consensual relations, you know, whatever the hell that means. But it's like
Wall Street. Remember that? They had a rape there, and there were other assaults and all that. The media downplayed it. They're okay with the sacrificial lambs as long as it's not their kid.
Can I tell you, man? It's just we need to. It's like the progressives here in California. You know, as you know, this nonsense. And what does Debbie do? Is she a writer? Is she a professor? She's probably getting a great pension from someplace at some point. You know what I mean?
Well, let me follow it up with this.
Yeah.
Now, one reason Trump is always in a battle is because the mainstream media is always putting out what I call false narratives. But people, a false narrative isn't always what they say. It's what they omit. So Rachel Morin, the trial just ended. They found the guy killed. I think the jury was like less than an hour or like an hour and a half deliberating, and they came back with a guilty. Similar case to Laken Riley, Rachel Morin. 0 seconds coverage, NBC, ABC, CBS, evening and morning show coverage, 64 minutes, 57 seconds. See, so this is the false narrative. This is what the Trump camp is up against. This is what we conservatives are up against. Your thoughts on that? Well, I guess my question is do you – we are making an impact, new media, for lack of a better way. But honestly, these three bigwigs still dominate the narrative creation. Your thoughts on that?
Donald Trump was one of the first people to call out the world's press for fake news. And it became, you know, almost like the word doge. You know, it's become a verb now. Fake. I mean, it's a noun. But, you know, he's called the people out. And it is fake news. I mean, you know, anybody who's studied this will tell you the same. And the truth of the matter is conservatives have been, we've had to run candidates across the country when we were outspent, when we were out-mediaed, you know, when things are made up, when people are debanked. We've been talking about this for years, and it has been going on. And, you know, look at Wikipedia, for example. Go in and look at anybody on Wikipedia, and one of the founders of Wikipedia will tell you the entity he sold it to is out of control. It is, we have been going through this. You know, Harmeet actually mentioned it, you know, in a CAGOP meeting we had. She said, it's almost like we've lived a big psychops operation the last 4 years. You know, it's just a psychops operation. And the amount of control here that the media has is just, you know, good on President Trump. Good, you know, we're calling it out. And I'll tell you, when I was in Britain, you know, a couple months ago with my wife, you know, we really noticed that the world is listening to Donald Trump now. The world, the conservative parties throughout the world, the traditionalist parties, the religious parties are looking to Donald Trump's, you know, to what we're doing here to fight back against this. And we're fighting back in Europe. And, you know, look at what the left is even doing, as you know. Look what the left is doing in Brazil. what the left is doing in Nicaragua. You know, look at what they did in the UK. Look at what they're doing in France. You know, coming out with a decision where Le Pen cannot run for prime minister.
Well, what bothers me is, when I was a child, when a country did what some of what Europe is doing, what Brazil did, we would condemn them, we would sanction them,
yeah,
and break relations. But we do none of that, and that's part of the reason why the UK is Europe is falling. And the first step into redemption for them was Trump actually saying we're not going to fund the Ukraine
war.
Well,
but you know, look at what President Trump did to South Africa recently. They've been having these policies against whites, and Afrikaners there.
They talk about genociding whites, and
only talk about it.
Yeah. So, Randy, moving on here. Then I don't want to bog us down here because
I'm sorry.
The same passions, and we could talk for hours on that. But I want to talk about here in 2022. There was a human trafficking suspicion. And the reason I say suspicion is Abrego Garcia was driving a vehicle with seven passengers. And according to a report to the patrol officer, he stopped Abrego Garcia for reasons that raised immediate red flags about the nature of his travel. Multiple passengers who's transporting them from Texas to Maryland. These cops, they innately can recognize certain signs. And he recognized the signs. This could be some human trafficking. And that's a crime that's been linked to organized networks like MS-13, of which there's no doubt, because two judges confirmed it, that he is part of MS-13. Officers found an inordinate amount of cash on him. The average person does not carry $1,200 worth of cash on them, even though most will say, oh, that's a small number. But
when he was just taking a bunch of Girl Scouts on a Girl Scout trip, come on, you know that, man. He just had lunch money for the girls. That's all it is.
God, that's just his natural magnetism. But here's my question and my issue. The Tennessee Highway Patrol, what year was this? This was 2022, the Biden era. This was when the DOJ was completely compromised, including the FBI under Christopher Wray. The Tennessee Highway Patrol contacted the FBI for guidance, and within hours, the FBI said, let him go, along with the passengers, an MS-13 member. So my question to you, Randy, because you do have ties with people working in government more so than I do. That just – it makes no sense. My first thought is this part of the Biden agenda? Hey, just let all the illegals go like he has been. That's the most likely. But I'm like, was he an informant? It's like this is so out of the norm, and the media is trying to spin it every which way but the obvious thought processes. Your thoughts on the FBI saying nothing to see here? I can't hear you. Randy, you're on mute. You're on mute.
Sorry. Yeah. Thank you. So the FBI, that's why Cash Patel is cleaning it up totally.
You're hard to hear right now. Something happened there.
Can you hear me there?
Yes, I hear you now.
There you go. No. So, yeah, the FBI is a joke. I mean, just a total joke. You know, that's why Cash Patel is going to make changes to the FBI. But Joe Biden, I'm going to say this, and part of the FBI, what they've done is criminal. When you take an organization that is being paid for by the American people to protect the American people, and what they did, they essentially told our FBI, our Border Patrol, to stand down. And when that happens, the people have to take control. And that's what the people did with this election. They should be happy that we didn't rise up at that point. They should be happy that we went through and we re-elected, Donald Trump, and we put Republicans in power, because they had a responsibility to American people to protect us, and they willfully and intentionally did not protect us.
Right.
Talk about RICO. The RICO laws protect the American public against racketeering on a national level. And what Joe Biden did and the Democrats, they were racketeers. They were mobsters just like anybody else. Who do they hurt? They hurt us.
That's right.
They hurt us. And Donald Trump, truthfully, do you think Donald Trump would wake up one day and say, oh, I want to kick people out of the country? Donald Trump, I mean, he didn't do this. He did some of this in his first term, but But we are at such emergency levels right now with the number of people that are left in. Donald Trump is left with no choice.
Right. Well, that's why he got elected. I think the people saw that. So, yeah. So real quick, just to reiterate, prior to 2025, he participated in multiple immigration hearings with two judges, evaluated evidence, his immigration association, informant testimony, and the cash on hand, and concluded he was a gang member. Not one people, but two judges. So when these Democrats, these mainstream media members, these Green Party libertarians, hell, even some of the rhinos like Murkowski and all that, when they pushed back, he did have his day in court. He faced bond hearings, immigration reviews, full notice, given every chance to contest the allegations, and he was deemed as an MS-13. He was thus, that is what the Trump administration used to facilitate his deportation March 15th, 2025. Now, the pushback you're also hearing, and Randy, I want to get your thoughts on this, is how dare they deport him to El Salvador in that maximum prison? He's not that type. And what they fail to tell you is he is El Salvadoran. What are you trying to tell us, people? Take him to, send him to Panama, to Brazil, to China? It's like, we sent him back to his home country. Your thoughts on that? I mean, to me, that just shows the ignorance.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
The lie of the mainstream media to the public. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah. Yeah. Look, I mean, like you said, is this the hill they want to die on? The facts are so against them. This is a bad guy. I guess as President Trump said, this is a mean hombre, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this is not a Girl Scout or Boy Scout. This is a mean guy. He needs to be back in his home country with his, you know, if he wants to do gang membership, do it in jail. You know, see how long you last, tough guy, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So what I want to get to here in the final section before I let you get back to the family is the Supreme Court. So for the audience, in early 2025, the U.S. Supreme Court issued a unanimous ruling addressing Abrego Garcia's deportation prompted by the Trump administration's transfer. Legal scholars, the most notable, he's out there the most, is Jonathan Turley, in terms of a name you'll recognize, that, you know, he gave his thought process on this. And for those of you not aware, Turley is seen as a prominent constitutional scholar. And he clarified that the court did not mandate Abrego Garcia's return to the U.S. as the mainstream media is stating, as Democrats are stating, as libertarians and Green Party members are stating. Instead, the ruling requires the government to facilitate his release from Salvadoran custody and ensure his case is handled as it would have been absent the improper deportation. I'm reading from this, people. I don't want to screw it up. So Turley underscores the court's distinction between facilitate and effectuate, noting that it deliberately avoided ordering the executive branch to forcibly retrieve him, thereby preserving the separation of power. So, Randy, first, if you can translate that overall, but I want you to drill down to educate we, the audience, on what Turley's underscoring, the court's distinction between facilitate and effectuate. Randy, this is where you earn your money, brother.
Well, you know, look, I think as I was saying before, the Supreme Court has no jurisdiction. They can't bring anybody back.
Right.
They can.
They don't have the means to bring
him
back.
I mean, they don't have the means. I mean, it's, you know, so effectuate. So, you know, and facilitate. This is Supreme Court gobbledygook. I mean, that's truly what it is. What the hell's the difference? I mean, so, but I guess the distinction Jonathan Turley is making here, to facilitate means that they need to take steps to potentially bring him back. What the hell does that mean? Isn't the American public sick to death of this nonsensical legal jargon?
I want to push back because what you said, they don't have the means to bring him back. Others are saying he worded it this way because Justice Roberts understood, we don't have the means if they go against us here. And I don't want the courts and the executive authority to be at each other's throat here, but we don't have the means. So let's write it this way, gray it up a little bit, you know, gray up the issue and let them do what they're going to do anyway. And we can save face because they're going to come out and say, we didn't tell them to bring it back.
Can I tell you? Yes. So look, so I agree with Jonathan Turley on that. I mean, there's two, you know, Justice Roberts is a weakling who should be out. He's a weakling. He only wants to be, he only preserving so-called power of the court. What power of the court? You know, do what the American people want. Keep this guy out. And stop talking in rhymes. Stop talking in riddles. Stop, you know, give the American people something that they can actually rely upon. You know, Justice Roberts, you back down from election integrity. You back down from most things. Whose side are you on? Are you on the American people's side? Or are you on just your own kick? This is why, ladies and gentlemen, we need to have, like, terms for these Supreme Court justices. But anyway, but you're right. He's sort of saying in a nice way, well, you know, we're not saying to bring him back, but we're saying to maybe, you know, the word facilitate means to do things that can potentially bring him back. What the hell does that mean? Come on, man. You know, to quote Joe Biden, come on, man.
Yeah, I mean, I think they do that purposely to grade up. So it's kind of like we're above all that. Y'all can battle out our words and all that because they never say anything. That's why I was shocked when Trump brought up impeachment. Now you have two judges saying, well, that's the wrong.
That's because they're fearing for their jobs. If somebody says, William, we should impeach podcast people, you'd say the same thing, right? Don't impeach podcast people.
You know, on the downside, though, Randy, first of all, I don't think we're going to get to it. I wish we would. Yeah. But I think we are the closest we've ever been to Congress and people within Congress going, we need to have that conversation about impeaching some of these judges. And I think the judges recognize that. That's why we're seeing some comments.
They're scared for their pensions.
That said, it appears the lower courts are taking this gray area and running with it on the opposite end by interpreting it as, yes, you've got to bring this guy back. Again, they had no power, you know. And not to mention, what's the guy's name again? Borrega, the one that you went to school with?
Boasberg.
But he was removed from this meeting. They said, no, this is the Texas court need to hear this, not you.
The Fifth Circuit, that was not your circuit.
He's still holding them in contempt now for ignoring his verbal order to turn the plane around and bring him back. Your take on the lower courts and the activism that we are still seeing.
I think the lower courts are out of their mind on this one. That's not what the justice said. The problem is Justice Roberts knew exactly what he was doing. He wanted to make it gray so that it would come back up in another. He wastes our judicial resources. Justice Roberts, and they waste our judicial resources. This is nonsense. He wants it to be gray because what he wants to do is he wants to sort of make it gray to see how the district courts interpret it. And then it's going to go to the circuit court. Then it's going to go back up to the Supreme Court. And they say, oh, well, based on the district courts, how they're applying it. And you know what? The Supreme Court typically gets involved when the circuit courts have a dispute, right? When like the Fifth Circuit disagrees with the Fourth Circuit and everything else. And then it goes to the Supreme Court, you know, because the Supreme Court really, you know, adjudicates disputes amongst the circuit courts. So what he's doing is just nonsense. He's saying, well, let's see how the district and circuit courts, you know, interpret it, which is just, it's just taking the ball and putting it in somebody else's court. Just so we're clear, the district court is the trial court. That is the factual trial court. Then you go and you have questions of law that goes to the circuit court. And then the circuit court, then you have another questions of law that goes to the Supreme Court. What's weird about this one is that, you know, it's almost like Justice Roberts was saying, well, you know, we're not going to make a determination here. We're going to give you some loosey-goosey gray area. Go back and see how you can work it out. What? Come on, man. Give us some. If you're going to say one thing, say one thing. If you're going to say one thing, another. But, you know, but it's going to make it even worse. It's going to cost more lawfare. It's going to cost hundreds of millions of dollars more. And if I was the Trump administration, I'd do exactly what they're doing. I would say, no, we're not bringing any back, and we're going to keep, you know, we're going to give these guys basic, you know, due process, or we're just going to ship them back based on the Aliens Act and stuff like that. We're just going to, because that's what they're supposed to do, to protect us.
Exactly, you know? And I think Trump always seems to have a problem messaging. He thinks he responds too much from emotion, but when he gets on message, he can be powerful. I think they need to grill Trump, put him in a room every day for a week, and say, these are the people you're going to talk about when you talk about aliens. You're going to talk about Lincoln Riley. You're going to talk about Lisbeth Medina, 16-year-old cheerleader who was found dead by her mother, stabbed multiple times in the neck and chest by an illegal alien. You're going to talk about Ruby Garcia, a 25-year-old woman was shot execution style in the head by an illegal alien. You're going to talk about Rachel Morin, a 37-year-old mother of five, raped and murdered by an illegal alien. You're going to talk about Kayla Hamilton, a 20-year-old autistic woman raped and strangled by an illegal alien. You're going to talk about Maria Gonzalez, an 11-year-old girl. Let me repeat, an 11-year-old girl sexually assaulted and strangled by an illegal alien. Sophia Rentschler, a 17-year-old raped and stabbed to death. Anastasia Weaver, a 26-year-old. Here's a 12-year-old, Jocelyn Nungare, a 12-year-old girl, lured under a bridge by two illegals, raped and strangled. And I could go on and on and on, Randy. And I mean, this sounds cool. William, you're just using them. No.
No.
I'm telling you what they're doing to our American women. Your thoughts on their marketing? Should they? Am I being too cruel by saying this is what you need to let the American people know?
Can I tell you, William, you are right on. And you know that woman you put up was a Goldstein or whatever her name was. You know, she should be put in front of the. She should be put in a room with the parents of every single girl that you mentioned on that list, and the friends and families of those girls. And she should talk about this quasi-consensual. She should have to justify herself. And that, and if, like I said, if she works for a paper, she should be fired. If she works for a university, she should be terminated. You know, and you know, God bless her if she has daughters, you know, or she has close family. God bless her if she does, because she is the epitome of the progressive liberal nut job who we get these people out of government or even journalism. I mean, seriously, these are people who are saying rape is okay. Rape is okay for racial disparity. Are you freaking kidding me?
There was a Democrat senator or assemblywoman in Colorado who said, well, if you're being raped, just pee on him and they'll stop.
Can you believe this?
So I want to audience here. Can you see that there pretty well?
Yeah.
Okay. So I got to pop it open for myself over here. Okay. So look at the, what I want to point out is look at fiscal year, look under homicide manslaughter, look under Trump's first term, 17 through 20, homicide manslaughter, 3, 3, 2, 3. Look at under Joe Biden, 6, 62. 29, 29. It's starting to get lower because they're like, hey, you got an election coming up. So far, 9. But that's a vast differential. But here's what I want you to look at. Look at the sexual offenses. 100 under Trump, 137. That's 137 too many, but 137, 80. It started to go down, then went back up in 20. That was when the summer of love with BLM and everybody was rampant. 156. But then look at under Biden. 488, 365, 284, 221, and look at the drop here to 75, and with one third going away. I mean, what when you see those numbers again? This is marketing. This is messaging. I said marketing, but it's a form of marketing. This is messaging. I think the Trump. If I had to correct the Trump in one way, it'd be the showcase those women and the push. These numbers much harder. Your thoughts on what are shocking to me, these numbers. Your thoughts.
Oh, yeah. Well, hey, look, I mean, these are the ones that are reported, too.
Yes.
You know, as you know, in the, you know, look, one of the problems in the illegal alien community is a lot of some crimes aren't reported. And some people, some lefties have used that to be a reason why they should be given legal status. I'm like, no. But, you know, but look, a lot of the names you mentioned are Hispanic Americans or disabled people and everything else. You know what I mean? I mean it's like, you know, they're going after the, I don't say the soft targets, but you know, this is just not right. It's not right, and these back up everything we're saying. These are bad people. These are bad people. They're bad for their families. They are bad for the communities. They're bad for the country. And the only and the countries who are sending them, who are allowing them to go, don't want them back. And but that's why you put them in the El Salvador jails. you make them, you know, walk around, you know, shave their heads and make them walk around like that. I mean, frankly, you know, frankly, if this was, I mean, I'm a death penalty guy. I wouldn't take bullshit from any of these people.
I am too. You know, I always argue with my, I don't argue, but I always bring up the Bible to everybody who tells me, well, Christians aren't supposed to be like that. Really? You read the Bible? The Bible doesn't say smite your enemy. They're like, destroy your enemy. Kill them all. You know?
Because eye for an eye. Tooth for a tooth. Yeah.
And, you know, so I think at the end of the day, there is the messaging, and you made a point here, and I want to give credit where it's due. Carl DeMaio is probably arguably the fastest rising Republican star.
In hey, good guy, like Carl.
And he's very polarizing in many ways, but he did say this, and I like Carl too. I just wish sometimes he wouldn't.
Carl's Carl.
Carl does what I want all Republicans to do to Democrats. The problem with Carl is he'll do it to a Republican too.
That you're right. That's one of the problems. But Carl's a good guy.
On their neck, you do that Bruce Lee, wah, boom, you know, twist down and drill down on that neck. Carl does that. But Carl made a point many years ago when I first got involved in 2015, and I had been saying this my whole life. I go, because I'm a marketer. I'm like, look, you don't allow these sexual assaulters to be put back into the community. He goes, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter that if they're Latino, because they said you have to have compassion. Yeah. They're Latinos. They don't know better. Or this, that. Carl was like, look, you put him in a Latino barrio, little Lupe's mother doesn't care that he's Latino. All she sees is a sexual predator. And that's how we need to sit there and show these people for who and what they are. Meaning, his whole point was, it doesn't matter if you're Latino, Black, Asian. They don't care if that person's Latino, Black, or Asian. They're not going to align with them. All they're going to see is a sexual predator. And every case I showed you, that's how we need to show these people. Are there good illegals that come here? Yes, but there's a process, and follow the process. And over 90% of these illegals aren't fleeing political prosecution. They just want to come to a better life that they know we have. But at the end of the day, as the Haitian refugees proved in Springfield, Ohio, when you drop so many of them on one community, you completely deplete that community of its social services, resources, and you destroy that community. So in essence, you're not uplifting anybody. You're just creating another ghetto, barrio, trailer park. Before we go, Randy, I want to post this up. This is the individual the leftists are trying to protect. You know, 2019, found to be a gang member by judges. 2019, appeals court affirms the judge. 2021, the wife requests a restraining order, you know, et cetera. That's what we are battling here. Is every illegal like that? No. But we got to get the bad ones out, then figure out a way to deal with the other ones. I'm with Randy. You deport them all. My only issue are the anchor babies, Randy, that were born and raised here who may be illegal, but they may be Mexican by blood, but they've never even been to Mexico or speak Mexico. So I do have compassion and leeway, but the problem is I don't have the compassion across the board. Every case is unique unto itself. Final thoughts on Abrego, our system, the judges, anything you want. The floor is yours, sir.
President Trump needs to be firm. Attorney General Bondi needs to be firm. Hamid Dhawan needs to be firm. They need to be firm right now. Now is the time when we've been compassionate for a long time, and Joe Biden lived on compassion. And where did it get it? Where did it get us? Compassion just means, if you could compassionate to a criminal, there's going to be more crime. I mean, these are criminals.
Honestly, do you think Obama and Biden or Kerry or any of these candidates who were actually president, do you really think they have compassion, or they're just looking at the numbers game and potential votes?
I just think they're looking at potential votes. I'm not sure they're compassionate there. You know, Joe Biden hangs around his own people, and you know, Obama. You know, I think Obama's a fraud, a phony. I mean, the sad thing is, I think Obama was in control the last 4 years. But the truth is, these people don't, you know, these politicians don't like the people. You talk to President Trump. President Trump will look you in the face. He'll slap you. He'll hug you. He'll give you, he'll shake your hand. He doesn't have to do this.
Look at what Bill Maher said, Randy, about Trump. Yeah. He's a real guy. He's this, he's that. He never got that from Clinton or Obama.
Yeah, he's a real guy. I've shaken hands with Clinton, and Clinton just, you always got the sense he was doing something on the, you know, you just couldn't trust him. I never met Obama, but you know, and I've shaken hands with President Trump. President Trump looks you in the eye, and he's, you know, he doesn't have to do this. You know, it doesn't mean everybody he's working with is in administration is like him, but he's setting a tone. But I'll be honest with you. I'll be honest with you, William. I hope nothing happens to President Trump, because we have a one of a kind right now, and they're right. We have a one of a kind. I mean, I wouldn't give him a third term. I won't give anybody a third term. I don't think that's what we do, because I don't think that's what we want to do in our country. I think it was bad with Franklin Roosevelt. We even did that. But we do have a one of a kind. But this one of a kind guy is strict now because he was burned his first term. And they really tried to, I don't say crucify, you know, because it's Easter coming up, but they really went after him and his family. And the truth is, he is fighting for us. I know nobody else who has fought for us this much. And I've been a Democrat and I've been a Republican. As you said, I've had my problems with George Bush. You know, I've had my problems with both George Bushes, and I thought they were too weak. I had my problems with Romney. I'm a supporter of Romney because everybody was, and it's just too weak. We have not had a president like President Trump. He speaks for us, and he does, and he speaks for the working man. You know, and the truth is, you know, I think, I hope he will stay as solid as he is now. And he's putting people in power who are tough, like Tom Holman. I mean, look at Tom Holman. Oh, man, that guy is, like, great. I mean, okay, and I know you're a martial artist. I'm a martial artist. And, you know, I want the people with martial arts degrees in there because, as you know, when you get punched in the head, you get, you know, your sensei kicks you and everything else. You know what it's like, but you know. At the same time, in order to, you know, this is not an easy job doing what they're doing, you know, and we're in a world of uncertainty, and we're trying to maintain what we have here in this country. It's a beautiful country. This is a great country. This is, I think, one of the best countries in the world, if not the best country in the world. If we don't fix this, you know, the rest of the world is looking to us right now.
But for the record, I was not a very good martial artist. But I did learn. My whole goal was to learn the basics to defend myself.
That's what you got to do, man.
And I'm very happy those 10 years did teach me that. But, yeah, because I did learn one thing about the average American. A lot of guys talk a lot of trash, but 99.9% of them don't know how to fight. And that's the advantage a martial artist or boxer or wrestler or anybody has in defending yourself. Always learn how to defend yourself, to take care of not only yourself, but your family.
As Bruce Lee said, learn what is essential.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Learn what is essential.
Exactly. So, Randy, I was thinking we're going to get the sophisticated, lawyer. Well, William, it's okay. Fluctuate, whatever. Instead, I got a street brawler today.
Can I tell you the truth? The truth around the law is you don't use it to hide; you use it to make decisions. The problem with judges, you know, they're sometimes they're just weak or they're so biased. I mean, I wish we need to have judges like you said who are making the decision based on the facts and the law. The problem is, that's not how they're elected. They're elected through political means, which we need to have a look at that at some point as to whether we want to keep going through that process where they get elected.
I would push back in this sense. If the Republicans would do what the Democrats do, we would get middle-of-the-road judges, meaning the Democrats would realize we're not getting our guy across. Let's find the middle of the road. That's what they did for judges on our side. The problem is the rhinos in the party were okay with the suitors, those types, that the Bushies and others. Why? Because people, I hate to say it, but the world is in a constant class warfare battle. The people lord over the masses. It's been that way since the dawn of civilization. It's up to us as Americans to change that, because we have the education ability, we have the prowess, the smarts, we have everything to keep our people in check. It's time to stop caring about how big Kim Kardashian's tush is
and really
bending us over.
William, as you know, being an immigrant too, you know, look, we're lucky in that we're one of the few societies on earth where you can transcend class.
Yes.
You know, where you can. Where I had done it, you know, you've done it, you know, and you can transcend class. And hardly any place in the world, you know, look at England. I mean, it's like you're either born, you know, maybe if you play, you know, their equivalent of football, you know, their, you know, the soccer, that you maybe can transcend. But we have that ability in this country. And And that's, you know, very rarely can you do that in the world. So.
You know, wow, you bring up a good point. So for the record, I am technically not an immigrant. Neither are my parents.
Oh, okay.
Even though they came from third world countries. My mom came from Panama. My dad came from Puerto Rico, which is a territory. But those two countries are literally third world countries. So the lifestyles, but technically we're not, just a few of the air if I ever run.
That's okay.
It's been a sound clip.
Eli!
But Randy. I started my fantasy sports company out of my, I like to say garage every single time, my spare room in the apartment. And one of the reasons for the success I had was because there are times you have to be ruthless, not cutthroat, but ruthless in your decision. And I would stand up to the I was one of the few small companies who was a voice for the small companies because I would stand up to the conglomerates who were trying to take everything the small companies had built and own it, meaning the gaming, the every form of revenue. And that's what we need. We need to have more of that where you're not vile, you're not evil, but you're standing up for yourself. And that is what Randy talks about. We can achieve anything. But you have to be smart, you have to be logical, and you have to have some backbone. People who don't have backbone, it's true, Randy. I hate to say this. Most of the time, nice guys finish last because we want to make everything nice. Sometimes you don't make a vile decision, but you make the hard decision, understanding there are consequences. But in the bigger picture, Randy, I am proud. My employees have gone on to greater things, working for conglomerates, working for NFL teams, working for television networks. And I'm very proud and happy that I'm 5'7". In fantasy sports, football is king. Where else but in America could get a 5'7", always too small to play his favorite sport, football, actually create a multi-billion dollar industry? Not myself, a whole bunch of us. But that's an American dream. And you can achieve that, and that's what President Trump is fighting for. And with that, Randy, I want to thank you so much.
Oh, thank you as always, man.
For coming on. And to the audience, make sure you bookmark grumblingsmedia.com, grumblingsmedia.com. Like and share this podcast. We have to get the word out. We went through a lot of heavy detail, but we put it all in layman terms so you have your quiver is full of the arrows to fight back when they say he has not had his due process. He has multiple times. When we talk about even though we don't necessarily agree with it because they don't have the power to carry out what they say, with Jonathan Turley, that's more power to fight back in. The legalese of the law opens it up to interpretation, and the mainstream media is feeding you one lie. So we gave you a lot. Make sure you like and share this, and make sure you follow us as well on YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, or Pandora under the handle Grumblings Media. Until next week, my friends, for Randy Berholtz. And, oh, before I go, Randy.
Yes.
Is there anywhere they can find you, find out more about you, if the viewers are interested?
Well, my daughter and I had a podcast that we had 50 episodes called Now Hear Me Out. We ended about 4 years ago, but we're going to come back. William, as I mentioned, I'm going to come back with a podcast. You know, even though, you know, I'm not currently in the leadership of the California Party, I expect to come back soon. And look, we got to keep this movement going. And, find me on the web where you can, but you can always get me through William also. So, okay.
And you know what we'll have to do? We'll have to bring you and your daughter on.
Oh, that'd be great.
And with that, my friends, I am William Del Pilar for Randy Berholtz and Fired Up. Until next week, we bid you adieu.